Dr. William Luther Pierce, 2001. Diversity is our strength.
Hello. 3 or 4 years ago, the slogan most diligently promoted by the controlled mass media was, "Diversity is our strength." Posters with this slogan and a broad, multi-hued band of stripes representing skin colors of various races were displayed in classrooms and workplaces all over the country. Clothing advertisements in all of the slick yuppie magazines pushed the same theme. The idea was that the fewer white people and the more blacks and browns and yellows we have in America, the stronger and more prosperous we'll be. I had friends who laughed at this propaganda campaign. They couldn't believe that anything so stupid would catch on. I didn't laugh because I had learned long ago that P.T. Barnum was right on target when he said that no one had ever lost a nickel by underestimating the intelligence of the American public. Actually, it's not that the public is stupid in the sense that they can't learn how to tie their shoes or get across the street safely. It is that the public will believe anything if they believe that others believe it. That's the lemming factor. And this "Diversity is our strength" brainwashing campaign was pushed hard. You saw this foolishness wherever you looked. And pretty soon it was clear that the lemmings had begun to believe it. My hate mail began containing indignant questions such as, "Why are you against immigration? Don't you know that diversity is our strength?" This promotion by the Clinton government and the media of the nutty idea that the more diversity we have, the stronger we are, didn't really change any policies or trends. I suspect that the aim of the media bosses in launching it was to head off growing restlessness about the refusal of the government to control America's borders. Illegal immigrants were pouring into the country, and of course still are, and the Clinton government was pretending not to notice. But many ordinary citizens were noticing and weren't happy. The media bosses decided to stifle the criticism of the Clinton government's immigration policies by persuading the lemmings that immigration, legal or illegal, is a good thing as long as the immigrants aren't white, because non-white immigrants add to our diversity and thereby make the country stronger. And the government kept doing just what it had been doing, and the diversity has kept increasing. The consequences are catching up with us, and they aren't good. But the diversity mongers are maintaining their pretense that we're becoming stronger and stronger by becoming less and less white. A few days ago, I saw a brief report on the CNN news program I watch about the increasing diversity in America's classrooms. More and more of the children in America's schools were born in the third world, or their parents were, and oh, isn't it a wonderful thing? Just imagine how much stronger our schools are than they used to be. Well, yes, we have a lot more metal detectors in the schools than we used to. I guess that's a sign of strength. We've had more school shootings since the beginning of the Clinton era than in the whole prior existence of the United States. The experience of dodging bullets undoubtedly strengthens the students. The pregnancy rate of unwed white female teenagers in the schools is approaching the black rate. Probably that's a sign of strength, too. One of the nuttiest expositions of the "diversity is our strength" creed I've heard is the one put forth by federal judge Patrick Dugan last December in his ruling on a discrimination suit against the University of Michigan by two white students who were denied admission while less qualified non-white students were admitted. The judge, in ruling against the white students and in favor of the university's racial quota system, abandoned the old liberal argument that quotas are needed to make up for supposed past injustices to blacks and other non-whites. The reason for making the university more diverse, according to the judge, was not to benefit minorities. It was to benefit the university and its white students. The real goal of our universities is not to educate students in the traditional sense, but rather to condition them to become, and here I quote Judge Dugan's exact words, to become, quote, active participants in our pluralistic democratic society once they leave, end quote. Judge Dugan believes, or says he believes, that racial diversity strengthens the university and the white students in it by rubbing their noses in as much diversity as possible and thus conditioning them for life in the new world order of democracy and multiculturalism, where there will be no white majority in America or anywhere else if he and his kind are successful. It's worth noting that Judge Dugan, if his name means anything, is not a Jew, but an Irishman. Furthermore, he was appointed to the federal bench not by some far-left Clinton nutcase, but by Ronald Reagan. He doesn't have to pretend to believe such destructive foolishness in order to keep his job. And unfortunately, there are lots of other judges and bureaucrats, both Jewish and non-Jewish, who believe or pretend to believe the same thing. At least that's the party line they're pushing. That is frightening. Diversity is our strength. Do you know what that reminds me of? War is peace. Freedom is slavery. Ignorance is strength. In case you don't recognize them, those were the official slogans of the government of Oceania in George Orwell's novel 1984. Let me tell you what kind of strength comes from our diversity. Alienation is the primary product of diversity. People who live in a homogeneous society, where the people they work with and interact with every day are similar to them, that is, look similar, have similar values and attitudes, react in similar ways to events, people in a homogeneous society tend to bond with the people around them. They tend to feel a sense of community. They tend to feel a sense of security from having people like them around them. They seek the approval of the people with whom they have bonded. They feel a sense of responsibility and protectiveness toward these people. With good leadership and reasonably good human stock, the community is strong. Take away the homogeneity and you greatly reduce the likelihood of bonding. Instead of a community, you have simply a collection of individuals, and each of those individuals is thinking, at least at a subconscious level, it's every man for himself. Without homogeneity, you no longer have a common set of shared values. Antisocial behavior goes way up. Schoolyard shootings and drug usage, for example. Neurotic and psychotic behavior goes way up, too. Diversity is a real boon for the psychiatrists. Borderline people who would adjust reasonably well in a homogeneous community are much more likely to go over the edge and become neurotic or psychotic as the diversity increases. Without homogeneity, the individuals in the society have a weaker sense of identity, a weaker sense of who they are, and what they belong to. They're much less likely to find positive role models among the real people around them, among their teachers and neighbors and community leaders. They're much less likely to have constructive goals or to lead purposeful and useful lives. Our people's instincts remain pretty much the same, even as our environment changes and becomes more diverse. Our young people still seek role models. We still seek to bond with others and to share their values and attitudes. When we no longer can find what we seek among real people around us, many find their role models and their values and attitudes in the artificial world of the media, which is to say, instead of natural role models, they find artificial role models designed by the men who control our mass media. Role models designed by the masters of brainwashing who are deliberately destroying our civilization. That, too, is frightening. You want more specifics? Classroom diversity, the thing I heard CNN bragging about and the thing Judge Dugan thinks is a real bonus for white students, has made a wasteland out of America's public schools and is rapidly doing the same thing to our universities. I'm a physicist myself, and so when I was a student, I spent most of my time in very specialized mathematics and science courses. But for most university students, certainly for those taking a general course of study, the most important courses are history and literature. Those are the subjects which more than any others strengthen a student's sense of identity and his feeling for the civilization he has inherited from his forebears. Those are the subjects which give him a knowledge of and the appreciation of the traditions of his people and a sense of responsibility to protect their cultural and racial heritage. It's for exactly this reason that history and literature are the subjects which have suffered most at the hands of the diversity mongers. The last thing in the world they want is for white students to develop a strong sense of identity or a sense of community with their own kind. That frightens people such as Judge Dugan as much as his nightmare vision of a multicultural world in which a white minority must adapt to the whims and ways of a non-white majority should frighten any normal, spiritually healthy white person. So, how do the diversity mongers prevent, say, white children in a sixth grade classroom from beginning to develop a sense of racial identity and an interest in the history and traditions of their own people? Well, the answer is obvious. Give the white kids a big dose of diversity. Put lots of blacks and Vietnamese and mestizos in the classroom with them. Then instead of teaching them about things European, instead of having them read about Greek mythology, about Zeus and Apollo and Aphrodite, and about the empire-building exploits of Alexander and Caesar in the ancient world, and about the nation-building accomplishments in the new world of Patrick Henry and George Washington and Thomas Jefferson, pump them full of fraudulent black history, not just during Black History Month, but every month of the year. Teach them about how the heartless, mercenary white plantation owners rounded up millions of happy, carefree Africans, put them in chains, and made them work as slaves in order to enrich their white masters. Teach them how the thieving gringos stole half of the United States from the peace-loving mestizos and the other half from the Native Americans, and about how the Yankee imperialists economically exploited the cultured, altruistic peoples of Asia. Instead of having them read the stuffy literature of dead white males, give them a big dose of lesbian resentment against our patriarchal society. Immerse them in ebonics and the ravings of black nationalists. Teach them that in music, Puffy Combs and Dr. Dre really have it all over Mozart and Beethoven. Make their heads spin. Condition them to become active participants in our pluralistic democratic society, as Judge Dugan said. But be sure the metal detectors are working, because not everyone reacts well to the conditioning. In past broadcasts, I have emphasized the Jewish role in this destructive business of diversity mongering. And indeed, one can hardly overemphasize that role, because the media under Jewish control have been the major driving force behind the "Diversity is Our Strength" propaganda campaign. But we should note that the Jews are not the only ones promoting this destructive wickedness. It really hurts me to talk about this, but the fact is that a very substantial portion of the white people who should be providing leadership for us now have turned against their own race. And it's not just the judges and the politicians and the bureaucrats. Much of the rest of the white elite, the wealthy and the powerful and the influential have sided with the Jewish media bosses in the campaign to force diversity on the rest of us. In some cases, the reason for this treason is religious or ideological. Although there undoubtedly is a correlation between wealth and intelligence, wealth alone does not guarantee independence of mind, nor does it guarantee principled behavior. Just as there are blue-collar lemmings and white-collar lemmings, there also are some very wealthy lemmings. Beyond this, I'm sorry to say, there still is much class prejudice, socioeconomic prejudice in America and also in other white countries. Just as there are people who are resentful by nature and hate anyone they perceive as having more than they have, or being more talented, or better looking, or more successful, so also are there snobs who really believe that their wealth makes them better and more deserving than those who have less wealth. They really believe that they don't need the rest of their race. They believe that they can continue to be wealthy and privileged on their own strength alone. They do not see themselves as merely a small and temporary part of something larger and more permanent and infinitely more important than themselves. They are completely self-centered. They support the Jews' open borders policy because it ensures that they will have not only cheaper labor in their factories, but also a steady supply of gardeners for their estates, cooks and cleaning women for their mansions, chauffeurs for their limousines. Their attitude is that the competition from non-whites will keep the working class whites in their place and compel them to work a little harder for a little less pay. Even the prospect of large-scale miscegenation does not displease them. Blending the non-wealthy whites with the non-whites to produce a dull and degenerate coffee-colored working class increases the distance between the masses and the elite and magnifies their own sense of superiority. In other words, they believe, with Judge Dugan, that conditioning for life in a multicultural, democratic world is what's good for the hoi polloi, but of course not for the elite. We're all familiar with the phrase limousine liberal. Unfortunately, it's not just wealthy liberals who believe that the social experiments they're perfectly willing to impose on working class and middle class whites shouldn't be imposed on them and their rich friends. There are all too many rich conservatives with the same attitude. For them, pushing for more diversity in America means being able to wrap themselves in the cloak of political correctness and having a favorable press, or at least avoiding the unfavorable press, which is an ever-present hazard for rich conservatives who do not support politically correct policies. Just like the rich liberals, their attitude is, yes, indeed, force the working-class white kids to go to school with blacks and mestizos if that's what the Jewish media demand. But my kids will go to private schools in Switzerland with personal bodyguards. I'm sure that wealthy people weren't always inclined toward race treason the way so many today are. In normal times, the wealthy were much more connected to the other social classes. The wealthy may have been selfish, they may have been unfair, but they understood that they were part of the race. They understood that their fate was tied to that of the other social classes. They were at least as concerned about the fate of the nation, the fate of the race, as any member of the middle class. They identified with their nation and with their race, but today most of them do not. They are as alienated as everyone else. The attitude of the wealthy, like that of the other classes, has become, it's every man for himself. And when I imagine myself in their shoes, I think I can understand that attitude. They look at the absolutely insane behavior of our society, of our government, and of most of our people. It scares the hell out of them, just the way it does any non-lemming. any person still able to think for himself regardless of his social class. They see the government refusing to enforce its own immigration laws. They see our cities filling up with non-whites from the third world, and nobody's doing anything to stop it. The media are telling everyone it's wonderful that we're getting so much more diversity. The government is telling everyone it's wonderful. The Christian preachers are telling everyone it's wonderful. And the lemmings are parroting what they hear. Isn't it wonderful that we're getting so much more diversity? The wealthy man observes this insanity, and he thinks to himself, everyone else may be crazy, but I don't have to let this insanity destroy me and my family. I'll just use my wealth to insulate myself from it. Why should I worry what all of these insane people do to themselves as long as I can escape from it myself? Our civilization is sinking fast, but fortunately I have a lifeboat, and it's every man for himself. And I must admit that I have come close to thinking that way myself. I took a trip out to Los Angeles not so long ago. The first time I'd been there since I was a graduate student at Caltech back in the 1950s. And let me tell you, if you like diversity, Los Angeles is the place for you to be. What a cesspit of diversity. The entire infrastructure out there is non-white. The cab drivers and the bus drivers and the sales clerk and the waiters and the cooks and the nurses and the road crews and all of the hotel and motel workers. About the only white people I saw were a few men in business suits carrying briefcases. And these few whites seem to have no clue as to how vulnerable they are. They think everything is normal, the way it ought to be. Anyway, you see people of otherwise normal intelligence mindlessly parroting such idiotic nonsense as, diversity is our strength, while the ravages of diversity are so apparent all around them, and your first impulse is just to give up. You think to yourself, a race so stupid, so blind, so easily and willingly manipulated and controlled by the Jews, doesn't deserve to survive. But then you remember, hey, I'm part of that race. I'm not wealthy enough to have my own lifeboat, and most of you aren't either. We aren't able to insulate ourselves with money from the insanity all around us. If the ship sinks, we drown or get eaten by the sharks. We don't have the luxury of being able to look down our noses at the foolish behavior of the rest of our people. We are obliged to do something to change that behavior. If we want to save ourselves, we must compel many others to save themselves as well, whether they want to or not. When a man wants to save himself, the first thing he must do is try to understand his situation. When he wants to help others save themselves, the first thing he must do is help them understand their situation. That is what we and the National Alliance are trying to do. We're trying to help all of our people understand their situation. That's a difficult task, but also a necessary task. You can help with that work, too. It is your responsibility to help. Thanks for being with me again today.